welcome dear listeners to the first episode of this brand new year. And to begin with, we wish you all a very happy, prosperous and a holy new year. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, as always being joined by Arvind, and we are here for the afternoon satsang. So before all else, on behalf of Arvind, on behalf of all our listeners, we begin by offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Sai Ram Arvind.
Sai Ram Prem. And you know, it's such a joy, such a blessing to feel that we have started this new year in Swami's presence. We were there witnessing the programs yesterday, and it is so symbolic, you know, that it has been the 1st of January, the first day of the new year has been set out for the students.
Right.
And you know, whenever I speak about Swami's relationship with students and Swami's special affection for the students, I'm always reminded of one episode which was narrated to us by a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He said that Swami on one occasion said that, you know, you may be a student of the Satsai University, but that does not make you a Sai student.
Okay.
You know, that is something for all of us to ponder about. And it is also something that will give cheer, I'm sure, to hundreds and millions around the world, because it shows that everybody can be a Sai student even though you have not been in Puttaparthi. Because Swami definitely considered a student of the Satya Sai University as separate from a Sai student. Of course, being a student of Satya Sai University gives you probably an added advantage of becoming a Sai student in an easier fashion, but that does not make you a Sai student. A Sai student is he or she who follows Sai's teachings.
Absolutely. And talking about the advantage of a Sai student, I think there is an advantage as well as a disadvantage. The advantage is, as Swami says, living with God is true education. So the learning is more possible there. But the disadvantage is you tend to get carried away thinking that you're a Swami student just because you're studying in Swami's university or school. So you have to remind yourself that that does not make you a student. And as you beautifully said, you know, the Prema Bandham, as they call it, the bond of love, that's what they call the alumni meet. Though it's on the 1st of January, it's the 2nd or the 3rd of January which is actually the special day. Because I remember way back in 2006 or 7, during the alumni meet, Swami gave a discourse in the Bhajan Hall where Swami said, you come here, have your programs on the 31st and 1st. On the 2nd, I will speak to all of you.
Exactly.
It was almost a word which Swami gave, and definitely Swami kept it. So it's a beautiful way to begin.
And it continues even today, Prem, because you know, on the 1st, of course, we had the program. But today is the 2nd. And let me tell you, I'm having a feeling that this afternoon satsang may seem like it's just meandering, because met so many students and it has literally been Swami speaking, you know. And everybody is opening up and sharing their experiences with Swami. I just feel that, you know, maybe we should not have a single meet on the 1st of January. Maybe we should have such short meets every month so that we can get all the students and extract experiences from them. You know, I just happened to speak to one of the students right now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Sonam, and Sonam Gyamtso.
Right.
He is a student who joined here in 1980.
Okay.
You know, when he said that he joined here in 1980, I was just thinking that I wasn't even born till 1982. So, I mean, he has been a student longer than I have lived on the face of this earth, you know. And he was sharing...
I mean, that does not mean that he was a student in the university, because we always believe that once a student, forever a student of Swami.
Exactly.
So, in that sense.
In that sense, yeah. So, Sonam, you know, he was saying, he was narrating an experience of one of his teachers. You know, it is such a rich treasure trove of memories. You feel that if you go and scratch some of these people, instead of blood, they will ooze out Swami's experiences. Because, you know, I just happened to show him one photograph of one teacher, that is, who is currently the joint director of the Prashantiniyam campus.
Okay.
Dr. Gangadhar Shastri. When I showed his picture with Swami, along the side, there was another person. He asked me, do you know who is this? I said, I don't know. He says, he's Dr. Raghunath Safaya. So I said, oh, okay, that's nice. He says, no, he's an amazing teacher and he had a phenomenal experience.
Okay.
And that's how it began. And I think that we can start off this satsang with this lovely little incident that he narrated.
Okay.
So Raghunath Safaya was a brilliant teacher of philosophy. And that time, that was one of the core subjects in the Sri Satya Sai Arts and Science College.
Okay.
As part of arts, they had philosophy. And apart from being a great teacher in philosophy, Dr. Raghunath Safaya was also a person who excelled in the subject of astrology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, astrology and therefore he was a firm believer in destiny. He always felt that whatever is happening in the world, in the universe, is nothing but what has already been preordained. It's just playing out.
Okay.
And it was such a teacher who had such firm belief in destiny, he had been given an interview. And you know, at that point in time when he got this interview, he was of the thought that maybe he will discontinue. He had taught for a while, a year or so here, and he had plans to leave and go elsewhere. And he felt that was his destiny. And he is nothing but a puppet in the hands of destiny. And in the interview, Swami calls him, and Swami, you know, almost teases him about his staunch faith in destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Swami tells him that, I'll give you a deal. Consider this.
Okay.
You surrender to me.
Mm-hmm.
Just listen to what I say. And commensurate to your surrender, I will take care of your destiny. You don't have to worry about anything. You need not put in the least effort for anything. Everything will be taken care of. Now, this teacher hearing this, he just in his mind thought, okay, Swami is saying something, but...
That also means how expensive surrender is.
Yeah.
How valuable surrender is.
How valuable and... Yes. But at the same time, you know, it gives so much... It's so easy actually to surrender because what is that you're surrendering? You know, please allow me this again another detour. And in case I forget, remind me where I was because I'll come back to this point. I'm reminded of a poem that was written by B.K. Mishra, sir.
Okay.
He's an English teacher, you know, in the school, higher secondary school, even today. That poem is entitled, it's there in a book called Grains of Sand.
Mm-hmm.
And the poem was entitled, He Came a Begging. Okay, he had written this poem on the eve of Swami's 70th birthday. And in that, you know, he was writing. The poem goes that a beggar comes to his doorstep. And he's been begging everywhere. And when sir sees, sir writes like he is the person in the home. He says, when I look at him, his bag is empty, which means that he has not had good collection on that day. So he says, what do you want? So he thinks that he's going to ask for something. So he says, you go ahead. He says, no, please give me something at least before you go away. So he says, listen, I don't have any old clothes at home. I don't have much money to give you. I don't have, food is not yet cooked now. So please, I don't know what I can give you. He says, have you got garbage at home? He says, yes, garbage is there. So, I mean, this he had written in poetry form. So then he says, then please give me your garbage. He says, you want my garbage? He says, yeah. That's strange. There's something odd. Nah, I think you're a funny man. I mean, there's something fishy going on here. I don't think I'll give you my garbage. He says, please give me your garbage. He says, how come nobody has given you their garbage? He says, that's a logic I don't understand. For 70 years I've been knocking doors, going around, asking people to just give me their garbage. People are not ready to part with their garbage. That's where the poem ended. And you know, this was for Swami's 70th birthday. It was so poignant that made you feel that, you know, Swami doesn't seek. Swami seeks things from us which will make us better. And yet, we think twice, thrice before offering it to Him, you know. So when Swami asks for our surrender, it's because He wants to uplift us and make us realize who we truly are. But we are hesitant. So coming back to the story, He was hesitant. And then, you know, Swami holds him by his palms and says, you have so much faith in your destiny, right? Have you had a look at your own destiny? Now, Raghunath Safaya, sir, he had seen his palm a billion times in his life.
Understandably.
Naturally. That's his passion. That's his hobby. That's his everything. And he knew every inch, every centimeter of the line, where it shapes, where it curves, everything he knew.
Okay.
And he looks at his palms. To his utter disbelief, there is not a single line on either of his palms. Just plain, flat. And Swami says, you listen to what I say. This is what I can do. No lines to read. Swami told him, no lines to read. That's it. You know, he just broke down. Those moments when words don't come and the conversation happens only through tears. He just broke down. Of course, he got his lines back when he came out of the interview room because that was what I asked Sonam. I asked him, brother, did sir have his lines or was it blank? He said, no, when he showed us, his lines were back. But you know, he says, we all knew that something dramatic and drastic had happened because that day when he came to class, he was sobbing uncontrollably like a child. And none of us had an idea what happened. He says, if you lose somebody very dear in your life, this is the kind of tears you shed. But you know, Brother Sonam was saying that when you gain somebody so dear in your life also, maybe you shed tears like that. Because he narrated what had happened. And you know, he was saying that within the next few days, this teacher, Dr. Raghunath Safaya, who had a huge bundle of all these astrology books, everything which had come down to him as heirloom, you know, from his father, grandfather, who all of them whom were astrologers. He collected all these books, bundled them. He walked to the huge well that exists between, you know, currently where the planetarium is, that well still exists.
Mm-hmm.
He walked to that well, just threw the whole thing into it and walked away, because one Swami has come in to your life. What are these books all about? That's what he felt. You know, Swami also says, when you have Daiva Anugraha, what can the Navagraha or the nine planets do to you? So I think this is I felt this was Swami sending Sonam to tell this story so that this is the way we begin our new year, that when we have our Lord with us, when we have God's grace on us, destiny, everything, nothing, they are all puppets. Even destiny is a puppet in the Lord's hand.
Beautiful, Arvind. Maybe Swami has asked you to tell me the story, because I am reminded of a couple of them, you know, similar to this. One of my seniors narrated, you know, when they were sitting with Swami, Swami was giving them an interview kind of a session there.
Mm-hmm.
And this boy got the opportunity to sit right next to Swami. So he held out his hand to Swami, and Swami held his hand. And as Swami was talking to the other boys, Swami was rubbing his palm.
Hmm.
I mean, just as a gesture of affection, Swami was just rubbing his palm. And the thought just crossed this boy's mind. He said, maybe Swami is changing my destiny.
Hmm.
Okay, and he just thought for it, and just thought to himself. He didn't even express it to anybody. And immediately Swami turns and he says, changed.
Wow.
You know, it's as easy as that for him, and that is the courage we'll have to carry from here. And I'm reminded of a classmate of mine. You know, this boy, he's actually a juvenile diabetic, and it's a completely beautiful story how Swami has taken care of him from his childhood. He's a student of the primary school. How Swami has always, you know, cared for him and fended for him. But I remember there was a time when many of our boys were interested in studying astrology as a science, you know, not to give more importance to us, but just to learn it as a science, just like you learn your maths and physics and chemistry. So they went to one particular person and they learned how to, you know, decipher these charts, these birth charts and palmistry and all that. So as you said, you know, Mr. Safaya, how he did, similarly, these boys started with their own charts. So each one would look at their charts and say what is there for in the future and, you know, what is it they had in the past. So when it came to this boy, the teacher who was teaching them, he was a brilliant scholar himself, and he looked at this chart and he said, last year December, did you have any problem? Did you have any health problem, or did you have any scare, you know, which was troubling your health?
Mm.
And this boy just thought for a moment, and we all knew him so well, and we had, you know, been with him, but we were not aware of anything, something which was so important which went past in his life. But this boy said, yes, I was a little unwell for a few days, and it was quite serious. I didn't tell anybody, but I was quite serious, and I came out of it. The next thing this man did was he folded that paper and he said, you can throw this away. He said, because your life ended on that day.
Oh.
So this chart has no relevance for you.
Wow.
You know, that is the courage with which we are going to start this new year, or for that matter, every day should be started with that feeling that this is the Lord for whom nothing is written, you know, which cannot be changed. Nothing is there which he cannot modify.
That used to be theme of every program that used to be put up on Ugadi, I remember. Because, you know, in India, the new year begins with Ugadi. And there's a different year cycle that we have, that is 60 years cycle.
Right.
And every 60 years the cycle repeats. And every year has been given a name. And the year changes happen during Ugadi. But I also remember this used to be the theme of Swami's discourses too, on the 1st of January, that don't give undue importance seeing that this is the new year, the year has gone by, so what will the new year bring? How is it going to be? Is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad? Because on Ugadi, I remember the tradition used to be reading out of the Panchangam.
Right.
The Panchangam meaning, that used to have...
What the year has in store for everybody.
And which planet is having which influence where, and it's called Panchanga Shravanam.
Right.
They say, you know, Guru, which is Jupiter, has this influence on you. Then Shani, which is Saturn, has this influence. So this you should be careful. Be careful in business. This will be a good year for farmers. All that is said. And you know, at the end of all that, it was invariably the practice, because it's like, you know, we had been given the answer even before the question had been asked by Swami. So every program would conclude with the statement that Swami has said, that when you have Anugraha, which is grace, what can Navagraha, that is the nine planets, do to you? And that is where it would end, because Swami has always emphasized that, you know, times are never good or bad. It is the dharma of a person that makes the time good or bad. And you know, in the Dharma Vani, Swami gives this example. He says, if you take the example of the demon king Hiranyakashipu and his son Prahallada, he says, for Prahallada, it was the most beautiful of times. Just imagine, when fire is unable to burn you, water is unable to drown you, snakes are unable to kill you, nothing happens to you because you are in the protective custody of God. It was the best of times for Prahallada. At the same time, Swami says, it was the worst of time for Hiranyakashipu. He was rendered absolutely ineffective, powerless. He couldn't touch a hair on his son's head and nothing could be accomplished. It was the worst time. But Swami says, it was the same time, right? It's the same time, then how can the time be the best of times for one person and the worst of times for the other? Swami says, that is the practice of dharma. Because Prahallada was dharmic, it was the best of times. And because Hiranyakashipu was not dharmic and he was adharmic, it was the worst of times. So Swami said, it is not time that determines the dharma, but dharma that determines the time. So don't say that this Kali Yuga, it's dharma is gone. This is the golden age, so dharma is there. Swami says, no. If dharma is there, that's the golden age. You know, every time we think that 20 years from now the golden age will begin, 10 years from now the golden age will begin, because we want a fresh start, a new beginning. And Swami says, every second is new. Start from the next second and follow dharma, the golden age is there. It is dharma that determines time and not time that determines dharma. And invariably Swami would drive home this message, whether it's New Year or Ugadi.
And you know, just adding to whatever you said, I remember these boys who learned astrology, they had a beautiful twist to what is usually known in astrology. In astrology, you have favorable planets. In some planets, people are scared of.
Exactly.
Rahu, Ketu and Shani and all, people scared of them, and then you have some beneficial planets. But in their study, what they came across was, these planets which actually bring problems into your life, they are actually the spiritual planets. And if you are able to approach these problems with that right spiritual perspective, in fact, these are the periods when you actually progress maximum. And that's why they are actually the real beneficiary, you know, beneficial planets. It's not the ones which confer on you wealth and other comforts.
Wow, makes a lot of sense, because, you know, I am reminded of what Mother Kunti prayed from Lord Krishna. She said, Lord, fill my life with troubles galore. Why? Because it's only when I am miserable and I am in trouble that I think of you. And I don't see any other way of sanctifying my life other than thinking of you. So if I am assured of a constant supply of troubles in my life, I will be assured that I am constantly thinking of you all my life. I mean, Swami has narrated how Kunti made this prayer to Krishna. So perfectly matches with what you said about the troublesome planets, so-called troublesome planets, being actually the spiritually beneficial ones.
So having said all that, Arvind, we thought of speaking about New Year resolutions. You know, it's a new year, it's after all just the second day of the new year. And all said and done, we are not in that state where we think every moment is new and we live in that feeling and live in that mood of celebration every moment as Swami would want us to. But you know, what is beautiful about a new year, about a new birth, I mean, your new birthday, or whatever it is that it's a moment which you can seize to start something new. You know, you can throw behind what you've been doing all this while and say that, okay, you always want markers, you always want, deadlines to start with. So that way, new year is a moment for that. You make new resolutions. All of us start with resolutions. But you know, the beautiful thing about New Year resolutions is, invariably, what is a resolution? You know, either you want to achieve something, you tell yourself, by the end of this year, I should have achieved this. Or you would say that by the end of this year, I should have attained a certain amount of discipline in my life. There are some people who say that I should have given up this by this year. or I should achieve this by taking up this discipline. So it's either a wish list or it's a list of do's and don'ts.
Exactly, it comes to that only, you know. And if you look at it, as you said, throughout the year this wish list is there. But somehow the new year seems to spur us into new energy, new enthusiasm. And because it works that way for us, even God is happy. You know, even Swami encourages, yes. He used to encourage us putting up the Ugadi programs. You know, if when Swami knows that every day is same as the other day, every moment is same as the other moment, and every moment has the potential to be a new year. Yet, Swami would encourage the programs and He would encourage us. He would Himself participate. I remember, you know.
In fact, we read out a card which Swami sent on New Year's Day to Kasturi last time, right?
Exactly.
Imagine Swami sending out greeting cards on New Year. So, it's definitely not out of place to celebrate it.
You know, I also remember that there's this practice, you know, during Ugadi called Ugadi Pachadi.
Right.
Ugadi Pachadi is something that is prepared. It's a kind of broth that is prepared by mixing all the flavors.
Right.
You know, sweet, bitter, sour, astringent, spicy, salt. Everything is mixed into it and it's partaken, you know, on Ugadi day. It is symbolic of saying that whatever this new year brings, bitter, sweet, sour, spicy, whatever memories, whatever moments it brings, I will accept all with equanimity as if it is prasad from the Lord. See, with that attitude it's taken. I remember on the first time when we were putting up a Ugadi program, this is how, you know, Swami gives impetus to a good thought and a good resolution. This Ugadi Pachadi was there and we spoke about the significance of Ugadi Pachadi, saying that this is symbolic that we partake like this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on the spur of the moment that Ugadi Pachadi was in a silver bowl. So we just said, Swami, we pray to you to bless this so that, you know, we will be serving this we will be serving this in the dining hall to all the boys who will come for lunch.
Okay.
As prasad. Swami was so keen, he called the boy holding the bowl of Ugadi Pachadi.
Mm-hmm.
That was brought to him. Swami took the spoon and he mixed, and then he waved his hand, created vibhuti, put it in the Ugadi Pachadi and mixed it. You know, we had a queue of people, you know, it is bitter, it is sour to taste, it's not a fantastic taste.
Right.
But we had people queuing up to take it. Why? Because there was Swami's vibhuti in it. That is what Swami's grace does, you know. It gives us encouragement, motivation, and it makes you look forward to something that is bitter and sour because it's coming with the Lord's grace. So, yes. So, it is a perfect time for us to look back at the previous year and start with renewed energy and added enthusiasm with resolutions.
And the beautiful thing of being in Prashanti Nilayam, and, you know, thinking of this concept of Swami saying that New Year is not important, every moment is new. We celebrate at least 5 or 6 New Years in Prashanti Nilayam, right? You know,
exactly.
The actual English calendar New Year, then you have your Tamil
Ugadi.
New Year's Day, you have the Malayalam New Year's Day, you have the Gujarati New Year's Day, you have the Marathi New Year's Day, then you have Ugadi, and, you know, the Kannada New Year also comes on Ugadi.
And there's Navroz also.
Right. So the idea that you're celebrating New Year's throughout the year is also emphasizing that point which Swami makes, that, you know, it is not just one day of the year which needs to be celebrated and needs, you need to take resolutions only on that day. You have to take resolutions and hold to them and strive throughout the year.
Okay. So now that we have come to resolution, how about discussing on what could be the best possible resolution that any one of us could take? What should be the resolution that we make? The thing is, you know, many times I'm reminded of an example where, you know, it is said that if God were to come and ask you,
mm-hmm.
that ask for anything, it will be granted. But after that, don't ask for anything else. Be happy and... But now whatever you ask, I'll give you.
Okay.
If God were to ask that, am I ready to ask something? Do I have anything in mind? Right away, I know some 10 things that I want now.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm told that it'll be fulfilled 100%, no doubt in that. But after that, don't ask for anything else. Which means ask for something which will give you permanent satisfaction and peace. Am I ready with the answer? I'm not. So, you know, continuing further along this line of thought, when I'm not aware of what is it that I actually want, how can I actually take a resolution? Means I don't know what is it that I want, then what is the resolution that I'm going to take? Because my wants and desires are so many, I don't know. And I don't know, maybe 5 years from now, I may not want some of those things.
Right.
So, how do you suggest we go about?
Yeah, I think one thing is, as Swami himself used to suggest, is just to make a wish list. You know, you just put on all the things in your mind, you know, all the things you want to achieve, all the things you want to do, and, you know, the holidays you want to make, the things you want to process in that year, and maybe even the things you want to achieve.
Great. Okay, so let's, maybe we can start off. That will be a good starting point. We make a detailed wish list, a kind of bucket list, you know, all that we wish to do. And it may run into hundreds and thousands.
And for a moment, forget about Swami telling that only one wish or three wishes are going to be, you know, granted. So yes, just feel free and write all that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you say this because I have actually done this exercise
okay.
in private all by myself
mm-hmm.
and came across some very interesting conclusions. The first thing that becomes, when you really put down this list, you know, actually,
mm-hmm.
the first thing that becomes obvious and evident is you yourself will strike out some wishes immediately after making the list. You know why? Because some of the wishes are in contradiction with the others. You know,
right.
To give a very drastic example to make it clear, suppose I say that I wish to see the world peaceful. That's one wish. And if my other wish is, I would like to see an atomic bomb explosion. Then it is obvious that both the wishes can't go together. Which means I have to cross out one wish and retain the other.
Right.
Now, which one do I cross out? The one that is less important for me. Naturally.
Right.
If I'm more interested in seeing an atom bomb, please forget about world peace now. You know, let's see the atom bomb. That's your wish. If you're interested in world peace, forget seeing an atom bomb in your life. So, I realized that after making a wish list, the next most important thing that we have to do is to prioritize our wish list.
Right.
You know, we need to tell that, okay, fine. So, if God were to come and say that, okay, you've got 5,000 wishes, I'll grant you 1,000. Now, which 1,000 do I choose? So, I definitely need to prioritize my wish list and put them down in order. That was one thing that became very evident when I made a wish list. And then, you know, the third thing that became evident as I pondered more and more about this wish list was, you know, one life is not enough to fulfill all those wishes.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when you actually make a wish list, have you noticed, Prem, you will not make a wish like, I would like to have cappuccino. Actually, if you ask me now, what do I want? I definitely feel like having a cold coffee maybe.
Okay.
But if you tell me to make a wish list, I will not put it down in the wish list that I want to have a cold coffee. Which means I feel that is too trivial. All the wishes are really grand wishes, more like an ambition, you know. I would like to become a painter. I would like to have scored 1,000 runs in cricket. And I would like to have sung about 100 bhajans in the mandir. These are all grand wishes. We don't put the petty ones there. Which means, don't you think we are automatically inbuilt to throw away trivial things and focus only on the grand things?
It's been very true. That's very interesting because that might be one of the virtues in writing down what you want. You know, as making a wish list.
Hmm.
Because as Swami would say, thoughts are so many. Because every time a student or any devotee would go up to Swami and say, Swami, there are too many thoughts, thoughts are troubling me. Swami would say, just filter out, make sure it doesn't translate into action. And that is what actually happens when you write down. You know, you might have 1,000 wishes in your mind, but when you sit down to write, somehow there is a responsibility in the act of writing that you tend to filter out all the trivial ones and the ones which don't matter. And as you said, we are inbuilt with that algorithm to think that, you know, these are trivial things and this is what I want.
Yes. And going further along that same line of thought, you know, for example, I was just thinking, suppose we take Sachin Tendulkar. Now, Sachin Tendulkar may not be such a global example because he's a cricket player. Suppose you take Diego Maradona, for example,
mm-hmm.
if football is more popular around the world. So if Diego Maradona had a wish list and a top wish in his list would have definitely been that I want to be a top-notch football player.
Okay.
Because that's what he went out to be. I mean, there is definitely, though they say that there are some who are born great, some get greatness thrust upon them, there's definitely the effort and that desire. Otherwise,
right.
you cannot. So, Diego Maradona had the desire to be the top footballer. But what if he also had the desire to be a top painter? What if he also had the desire to be a top singer? Now, clearly, these three are, you know, collision with each other.
Right.
It is just not possible that in one life you become a top-notch footballer, a top-notch painter, and a top-notch singer. You have to give up. You said, okay, you can't be all three. Pick one, you will be that, other you can't. If we actually think, you know, maybe in one life, it is just possible to achieve one desire. You see, I may turn out to be a okay football player. You know, I am respected in my university. But the minute I go to the district level, I'm a nobody. I'm just thrown out. if I really want to achieve my desire to the fullest,
mm-hmm.
in the best possible capacity, probably one life is just sufficient for one desire or one goal.
Yeah, that's something which is needs to be thought about, you know.
Because if one life is sufficient only for one goal, then all the other desires, all the other goals that I have are actually distracting me from that top priority goal of mine. I mean, the vices we recognize, we say that he could have become a great cricket player if he had not gone into drugs. Why? Because drugs distracted him from cricket. But what about, for a person who is passionate about becoming a football player or a cricket player, maybe even academics act as a distraction. He doesn't want to go into academics. He just wants to concentrate all his time to become a top-notch cricket player. And we have had such people, We have had such people who have touched pinnacle of glory in their respective fields, but have been nobody in their... Albert Einstein was called a loser. He was told to be a total failure. This is amazing because Albert Einstein went on to be a star in the field of academics itself. What he propounded and what he found out in his time, the top university students of his time didn't understand, but he was considered as a failure in college. And he blamed it. He said that if you judge a fish for its ability to climb a tree, of course the fish is going to fail. So, Albert Einstein's, for Albert Einstein, school was a distraction. Please let me alone with my thoughts. I will come up. And that's what he did. As long as he was in school, he was a failure. The minute he gave up school, he became a success. So, if we go by this, I know there's no concrete way to prove it. But intuitively, you can realize that the lesser the number of desires, the lesser the number of goals that we have, the easier for us to focus and achieve what is our top priority. And the best way to achieve our top priority is to ensure that there is no other priority. If we have only one goal.
And from what you've been saying, another thing which occurs to me is, imagine the time when there was no internet and when there was no exposure to the world as such.
Mm.
Imagine we were living in a village. Our list would be much smaller than what it would be now. If now you're thinking of traveling the world and seeing these places, if you didn't know that these worlds existed, these places existed, they wouldn't, make it to that list. So, and if you actually look at a little child, a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, I don't know if you've done that, when you used to go to the schools in the nearby villages and go and interact with the children, almost 80% of them would either say that they want to become a police constable or they will say that we want to become a truck driver.
Auto driver, yes, I remember that.
Because that is all they have seen. But when, as they grow, they see, more options available and better options available, as you're saying, this lesser desires just drop out. And it would be a wonderful exercise for each one of us if we could make two lists. The list of our wishes before we came to Swami and the list of our wishes after we came to Swami. And we would see the difference in the two lists.
Beautiful point, Prem, because what position are we to make a list if we are like those children who don't even know what is there? When Swami says, shut up and don't ask for anything, because you will ask me for something that is far lesser than what I actually plan to give you. It makes total sense. You don't even have an idea. Swami says that the child sits at home and cries that the mother is forcing it away from its toys. Till the mother actually takes it to the store and makes it look at all the toys and it's wow, filled with wonderment. So too, we don't even have an idea of what is there that we can achieve. And yet, we feel that this is our list, this is our desire. And when Swami makes us give up those desires, we think that he's making a sacrifice. He says, have ceiling on desires, cut out all that. We think that, Swami, you're putting up a restrictive practice, a restrictive program which will curtail my happiness. Not realizing that this is actually a program that is meant to give us total and complete happiness. We recently had a satsang on ceiling on desires.
Right.
And I'm reminded of a discourse which Swami delivered during the 50th birthday celebrations.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, for those who aren't aware, there's a beautiful Sai Blossom product called the 50th birthday, the Golden Jubilee, which comes with a video DVD for 2 hours and an accompanying audio CD with 9 unforgettable, never before published discourses.
Right.
And I'm quoting from one of those discourses where Swami says that though you're standing on the earth, which is moving at so many thousands of miles per hour, you feel that you are stationary. But the truth is you are moving. Why is this discrepancy? Because what you think is the truth and what is the truth are different. In the same way, Swami says that science has proved that a wall is made up of atoms, atoms which are 98% empty space, which means this is empty space actually. But you call it a solid wall. Why? Because what appears as the truth and what is the truth are totally different. So too, when it comes to ceiling on desires, you think that ceiling on desires is a restrictive program that is making you cut down on your happiness. But it is not. It is a program that is going to give you unbounded, infinite bliss. But why this discrepancy? Because once again, what appears as the truth and what is the truth are totally different. I think Swami knows, it doesn't need my thinking to authenticate that. Swami knows that what we desire ultimately is happiness and joy, and we can get that only by cutting out all other desires and focusing on one desire, which we need to think about what is that desire actually.
The other thing which comes to my mind even as I hear you is that it again comes to what we place our importance on, you know, what we give priority to our life, because it's all about prioritizing. You know, the idea of making that list is that. And, you know, I'm reminded of a very beautiful interaction which happens when Mother Teresa is actually, serving a leprosy patient. You know, he's full of sores all around his body and he's smelling and he's in the gutter. She goes and picks him up and she's bandaging him. And a journalist who is actually there to witness her work, you know, he's aghast by this, what he's seeing, that, you know, this Mother Teresa is without any, you know, without the least, she's just not troubled by the odor which is coming, the sight which she's seeing, and she's just going out and helping.
And also the fact that she might possibly get infected.
Exactly,
because leprosy,
you know,
is...
she could contract the disease herself. And this man was looking at Mother Teresa, he said that, you know, Mother, I wouldn't do this for $1 billion. And Mother Teresa looks at him and smiles and says, neither would I. Because she is doing it for the love of Jesus, and that's much, much more valuable than $1 billion.
Wow.
You know, that is the thing which will actually make you remove your wishes from your wish list. Because when you start giving importance for something, you don't have to remove wishes. The wishes just vanish on their own. You know, that is our experience.
Perfect, Prem. You know, I think this is the perfect point for you to narrate that story of Brother V. Kumar, which you narrated. You know, which shows us how it is, once we have our focus right, that is, once we have God in our lives, the lesser wishes actually go off. I mean, we find some kind of tremendous inspiration just in our love for God.
Yeah, I know, and this was narrated to us by him a couple of years back. He was saying that he had finished his MCOM, and Swami was very particular that he should join for the MBA program, which he just started. So, you know, Swami told him that you go and join for this program. He went and spoke to the Vice Chancellor. Swami said, I want this boy to study. But, you know, they had their own issues. They said, Swami, he's not very academically oriented, and this is a new program. You know, it was just starting. So they were, it had all the aura around it, you know. The MBA program is only for the elite, the academically oriented. And, you know, the authorities were trying to tell Swami that, Swami, maybe he will not cope up with the rigor of that course. Swami said, no, he'll do well. I will take care of him. He will do well. So he joined the MBA program, and he was a person, we all know, he was a musician, he was a bhajan singer here. His focus was completely on Swami and bhajans, and understandably he didn't do the exams well in the first semester. And the authorities went up to Swami and gave the results, as it always happens. And Swami saw this results of V. Kumar and he was a little upset. So called V. Kumar inside the interview room, and there Swami said, see, I have recommended you for the course, and this is what you do. You know, that's the tone in which Swami was telling him that. And he was feeling a little guilty that, you know, he's upset Swami. Then Swami said something which was very profound. You know, Swami looked at him and said, Kumar, I want something from you. Will you give me? And you know, that like struck him like an arrow straight at his heart. He said, Swami, anything for you. You know, you don't have to ask me anything for you, Swami, even this life. And Swami said, you know, I always say I don't want marks. Just make sure you don't have any remarks. But today I want marks. That's what Swami said. Today I want marks. Will you give me marks? And when Swami asked this, you know, something got over him, and he said, Swami, just look out for my marks in the next semester. You know, just watch out. And, you know, the semester passed and he worked really hard. And The next semester when the results came, the authorities took the results to Swami, and the first thing Swami said was, you know, how much did Vikumar get? And needless to say, he had aced those exams, and that was the highest marks he had ever got. And he had passed them with distinction. And Swami just came running out of the interview room and announced to the whole campus, which was sitting there, Vikumar got first rank. Though he had not got a first rank, but you know, in Swami's eyes, that effort had actually earned him the first rank. And you know, that is what, when pleasing Swami is the uppermost thing in your mind, when to make Swami happy, to see that smile on Swami's face is the thing which is uppermost in your mind, to see Swami in that pride is what actually drives you, you will really push yourself way beyond your limits.
Exactly, Prem. You know, it gives new meaning to what Swami says MBA is. Swami says MBA should be mind on Baba always. You know, in that way, you know, Kumar qualified in every sense, but we mistook it. We think MBA is Master of Business Administration. Swami also says MBA is nothing but understanding the true meaning of the mind, the body and the Atma. So, in that sense, you know, as you perfectly said it, when God is a focus, all other things automatically happen. It is not as if worldly success and, you know, your brilliance in the worldly sense is compromised because you are on the path of spirituality, on the path of God. Even Swami Vivekananda, there's a story that, not a story, this is a narrative of how when he had been to the United States, he comes across a person who is trying to shoot floating objects in the water.
Okay.
And that person is not able to do much of it. So Swami Vivekananda says, let me try. He picks it. He picks the gun. And 10 shots he fires hits all the 10 objects.
Mm-hmm.
And the person says that you must be an excellent marksman. He says, no, this is the first time I'm shooting. He says, then how on earth did you manage to do this?
Mm-hmm.
He says, there's nothing special about shooting. Or for that matter, anything else in life. My master has taught me how to focus. And once you get that focus, anything can be done. It's the same, you know. Once you get God, everything else comes off along. And that is why I feel New Year time is a special time when we should have that discrimination that my resolutions should be all about God. Nothing related to the world, because the world will just follow. It's like the shadow of God. It has no other option but to follow if we get our focus right. And that is why this important discussion on what should be our New Year resolution.
You know, Arvind, before we move forward, you know, one complaint which listeners might have is, you know, you're talking about trivial things and anybody can do well in an MBA exam and anybody can achieve anything. But there are some things which are more difficult to kick, you know, some habits, some addictions, which are more stronger. You know, can your love for God actually allow you to come out of these? Now, that's a question which people ask. You know, it's easy to talk about simple things and desires. Yeah, before we move forward, you know, I'm reminded of a beautiful incident which happened with a youth who works with the Hyderabad Youth Group.
Hmm.
You know, there was this boy. Swami was very fond of him because he was always doing something or the other. You know, he would go to a school for special children and serve them, or he would always be in the village doing some service. He was always doing something which would please Swami. But this boy had 3 bad habits. You know, if you could call them bad habits, he was a smoker, chain smoker. He would drink innumerable cups of coffee a day, and he would eat a lot of ice cream. Okay. So whenever his friends would see him, he would either have one of these in his hand. He would either be smoking and drinking coffee or eating ice cream. But he is the gem of a person. You know, he's a very, very dedicated devotee of Swami. So one day what happened was he had got some of the students of the school of special children to have darshan with Swami. And he would bring them all by himself. And he would give them a bath. He would, you know, take care of them, take them for food, and bring them for darshan. And so one time when he had come, Swami came out and asked for this boy. And this boy was apparently in the sheds giving bath to some of those children. So somebody ran to him and said, Swami is asking for you. He came and Swami called him inside the interview room. And Swami looked at him and said, hey, you are smoking too much. Give up smoking. So the boy said, Swami, you want me to give up smoking? He said, yes, it's a bad habit. Give it up. Okay, Swami, from today I'm giving up smoking. And that's it. And he just gave up smoking from that day. But this didn't end there, you know. A couple of months later, he came with another set of group and, you know, he was there. Swami called him for an interview again. And Swami said, hey, You're drinking too much coffee? Stop drinking coffee. So this boy said, Swami, I've already given up smoking for you. Do you also want me to give up drinking coffee? He said, yes, stop drinking coffee. It's not good for your health. He said, okay, Swami, for you, I've given up drinking coffee also. And from that moment, he never had coffee. And you know, you could talk of these as one as a very, very strong addiction and the other as a mild addiction. But he was able to give up both. But now comes the last one. You know, a couple of months later, in another interview, Swami said, hey, you're eating too much ice cream. Stop eating ice cream. But this is a little aside. It's not got to do with the discussion we're having, but it's very sweet, and nevertheless, it should be part of this narration. And this boy says, Swami, I've given up smoking for you. I've given up eating coffee for you, drinking coffee for you, but I cannot give up eating ice cream. So Swami said, why? When you can give up drinking and, you know, drinking coffee and smoking, why can't you do this? He said, no, Swami, because ice cream and Swami has a similarity, he said.
Mm.
Okay, and this boy, Swami said, you know, what similarity? And this boy said, Swami, you find out, you guess. Okay, and Swami said, whiteness, because, you know, vanilla ice cream was the ice cream which Swami used to always give all of us. So Swami said, is it the whiteness? Is it the purity? He said, no, Swami. Then Swami said, okay then, if you don't want to tell, I don't want to ask. Okay, but the next day, darshan time, Swami came to him, and Swami asked, what is it? What is that similarity? Okay, he said, Swami, you guess. And then Swami said, softness, He said, no, Swami, you guess. So then Swami again said, okay, if you don't want to tell, I don't want to know. And he went off. Then the third time Swami came and said, no, you should tell me. What is the similarity? And this boy said, Swami, you and ice cream melt very easily.
Oh.
So, you know, that is a little sweet aside, but that was the thing, you know, you talk of any addiction, any strong habit which is, you know, grasped you. If love for Swami and something which is so very pure is driving you, giving up these things will not be too difficult at all.
You speak about giving up, you know, I am talking about getting something also. Mm-hmm. Yes, if you talk about giving, we also spoke about Dr. Gangadhar Shastri sir, who is currently the
joint director
of our Prashantilam campus. How it was in an instant that he gave up smoking. But now I am also talking about, this also we spoke about before, I am talking about our own colleague, Arvind Sai, mm-hmm. who had that burning passion and desire to sing for Swami. Sing for Swami, you know, the motivation is so important. And he would sing bhajans every time, wherever, in the corridors, in the bathroom, every time. But he could never get to sing before Swami because he had a peculiar problem. His ear could not just pick up pitches. How much ever he tried, he just could not sing on key. Because it makes no sense to him. He just sings, and if the keyboard catches his key, he's perfectly on key and he's singing well. But if a key is given to him, a pitch is given to him, he can't sing on it. And this was his problem. And yes, it's a long story, but cutting it short, it so happened that Swami chose him to be part of the Burakatha team. And thank goodness the Burakatha would have him as the lead, so everything else would follow him. After which, Swami allowed him to even sing in his presence.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time he sang in Swami's presence, he was totally off key. In fact, the harmonium person had to play and match up to his pitch. After which, he went to the teacher in charge and said, sir, let me practice a bit before I sing again. Sir told him that, you know, forget singing again. Unless Swami tells you to sing again, you're not singing again. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you have a, if you can call it, it's a disability. You're just not able to catch the key. And then he practiced and practiced and practiced and just nothing seemed to happen. And then, you know, he said he felt that, you know, Swami has given me this ability to sing. Swami has given me this desire to sing. And I've got this chance. And I'm not able to do it. I have to. And he burnt with that longing and, you know, tears came down his eyes thinking that I may not be able to sing for Swami. And then he says in Kodaikanal, when Swami told him to sing, he could just sing. And after that, today we see he is one of the lead singers in the bhajan group who continues to sing. He has sung in all, not all, in the later Nada Brahmams that we have come up with. He has sung there. And he is a beautiful singer. So you spoke about how love for God can make you just give up something in an instant. And here is love for God making somebody gain something in an instant.
So you are talking about developing a talent because of love of God. But I want to talk about ignoring a talent completely because of love of God.
Wow.
You know, this is a story of our Hariharan sir. You know, we've heard it many times from him.
Hmm.
He was telling, you know, when he joined the university way back in, I think, early 80s or late 70s, he was a brilliant violin player. In fact, he was as good, you know, he could go and give concerts. You know, that's how good he was. He was a professional level player already. And then when he came and joined the university, and invariably Swami would come and ask, are there any singers and are there any talented boys? And, you know, to give them a bit of chance to perform in front of him and to give them a little bit of
kind of a talent search program.
Right. And invariably they would have a talent search program in the university, which would be attended by Swami.
Wow.
So they went and told Swami that, Swami, there are some very good instrumentalists, there's a very good violin player, you should come and listen to them. So Swami went and there was a program. And here was Hariharan sir, this was the moment of his life. He said, I can just floor Swami with my music now.
Hmm.
And all I have to do is play my best, and Swami is going to be so very happy that he's going to, you know, I'm going to be the apple of his eye. That was the idea which he had. So he gave one of his best performances that day, and to say the least, the audience were absolutely dumbfounded by the talent which he expressed that day. But that day, you know, after all this, Swami went up to the stage to bless all the students. Swami was happy, you know, Swami congratulated him for having given a beautiful performance. But then Swami said just one statement. Swami said, you know, people like Tyagaraja and all, you know, they sang because of the love for God, not for the music. Because they loved God, that love expressed itself as music. Music should be like that. And Swami walked away. And that is when it struck him that this display of music which he was putting in front of Swami was actually nothing but his ego, you know, being paraded in front of Swami, not his love for Swami. So he said that night he took his violin and shattered it to pieces. He just broke it to pieces.
Mm.
He said, Swami, if this music is going to take me away from you, I don't want this music at all. And imagine, he was a professional violin player, and he says that he never played violin after that. Because he said, Swami, if this is going to take me away from you, I just don't want this.
Oh, I mean, I can... He is such an amazing bhajan composer. Some of the most famous bhajans, Anandamaya Bhagwan,
right.
Hey Premamaya Bhagwan. That's his composition. Then we have Sai Ram, Sai Sham, Mere Sai Ram. That is a heart throb.
Aao Pyare.
Aao Pyare, Naina Hamare. All these songs he has composed, and I have never seen him play the violin.
Yes,
to this day.
He said he just played it once after that, when M.S. Subbulakshmi was supposed to perform in front of Swami, and she didn't have an accompany. Yes, and she didn't have a violinist to accompany. So Swami gave him a violin and said, play for her.
Wow.
And that was the only other time he played the violin. But he never played after that. You know, that love for Swami and that real pining and yearning for Swami can not only make you give up addictions, not only make you acquire talent, but can make you ignore anything else which can actually become an impediment in your journey to Swami.
And that is possible only when we realize how valuable Swami is in our lives. He's more valuable than our most prized talents, most prized possessions. And I feel that could be possibly one resolution that we can take on New Year's Day, that we realize, let us make efforts to realize how valuable Swami is, how much we should love Him, and how we should love Him more and more with each passing moment. Because the minute we either stagnate in our love or reduce our love for Him, we are as good as dead.
Right. And, you know, before we get on to this discussion, we've had a good close to an hour long discussion. Maybe we'll just take a quick break, we'll play out a song, and we'll come back and we'll continue this wonderful discussion we're having.
Thank you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to the Afternoon Satsang, and we're talking about New Year resolutions. Of course, we're talking quite...
New Year resolutions also.
New Year resolutions also, yeah, that's a better way of putting. And you know, before we took that break, we were talking about how the desire to please Swami and the love for Swami can make you give up so many things and make you achieve so many things which you wouldn't have achieved otherwise. You know, there is one pitfall in this journey, you know, because the idea is, of course, to please Swami or to get closer to Swami or get Swami's attention. That happens for students most of the time. But in the process, we sometimes give more importance to that path or to that object which is going to take us to Swami than Swami himself. And that happens many times. I'm, you know, tempted to share what one of the alumni shared. You know, he was a bhajan singer. And for some reason, during a period of time when he was a student here, Swami stopped him from singing bhajans. And you know, that was understandably, you can understand what was running in his mind. It was the toughest phase of his, you know, stay in Prashanthi Nilayam. Swami was not talking to him. Swami was not allowing him to sing bhajans. Because for many bhajan singers, that singing a bhajan is like conversing with Swami. You know, they're allowed to sit there and pour their heart to Swami. And if that is not allowed, you know, you're kind of stifled and you're being stuffed out. You know, that was a phase this boy was going through, and it happened for 3 or 4 months, and he was trying to give letters to Swami. Swami was not responding. One day he was saying that, you know, he was sitting where this the car garage is, you know, that's where, you know, that place maybe has a significance, because most people who want to be to themselves and to be in a bit of solitude, they go and sit there and contemplate. And you know, maybe one of those moments when this boy went and sat there, and he started thinking over what to do and how to get Swami to speak to him, you know, how to get back the chance of singing for Swami, because that was like a lifeline for him. And that is when it struck him, you know, why am I actually singing bhajans in the mandir? It is because I'm singing it for Swami. And if I'm singing it for Swami, I can sing it even when there is nobody around and there's no mic in front of me. I can actually sing to Swami whenever I want to, and Swami is always listening. And when this thought occurred to him, he said, why should I be in the bhajan hall to sing for Swami? Sitting here I can sing for Swami, though I'm not leading the bhajans. And thinking this, he just, you know, he went into a very, very deep state, and he was in a state of perfect connection with Swami, and he was in tears and enjoying the bhajans. And the next moment, what did he see? Swami was walking down, you know, that slope where Swami would come near the car garage. Swami came there, and as though nothing had happened all these months, Swami looked at this boy and called him and spoke to him.
Wow.
And you know, he was saying that was the most powerful moment for him, because you know, it is not because Swami called him, and it's not because Swami showed his omniscience, because a beautiful lesson had dawned on him, and Swami was acknowledging that. And you know, he was saying that for a moment he was letting the path actually take, you know, get all the importance than the goal itself. And that's when he said, it's so important to always remind yourself, what is the goal? What are you doing this for? And keep yourself reminded of that.
You opened a Pandora's box, Prem, with that incident, because simultaneously I was reminded of 5 incidents, and we definitely don't have time to go through all of them. But you know, one was regarding Sailesh sir from the higher secondary school. I won't go into the incident, but at the end of the incident, you know, he said that, you know, he's a brilliant physicist, he's a brilliant teacher, and he is a superb harmonium player, you know, and he has got so many compositions to his credit, and he is still the main lead harmonium and keyboard player in the mandir. And he said that at the end of one episode, he realized that, you know what, I have come here for Swami and not for physics, not for harmonium. Because, you know, as a school teacher, when he was telling us this, it sounded tremendous, because we felt that he was born to play music, he was born to teach physics. It was almost as if his goal in life is physics and music. That good he is. And here is he telling us that, you know what, I have not come here for physics or music. Tomorrow, if I have to give up music and physics, I will give it up, because I have come here for Swami. You know what you rightly said about not getting lost in the means and forgetting the goal. 2-3 more incidents come, but I will stick to just one more, you know, where this was a regular practice those days, you know. Different people come and, you know, gift Swami with all kinds of things, starting from pens and pencils, clothes, you know, shirt pieces, safari pieces, and perfumes, everything. So much they land up. And what Swami does, once or twice a year, he has a mass distribution. On some occasions, he just gives it off to all devotees also. But one regular feature was, he would call in all the students into the Purnachandra auditorium and distribute things to them, just randomly, give away the things, all that have come. So, one sought after distribution, if I could say so, was the toiletries distribution.
Okay.
You know, because, you could get an expensive perfume, you could get a razor, and you could get a shaving foam or a super shampoo, you know, which is not available in India. And all the students will be seated on the floor, and it would be like a mass distribution, you know, in covers, people put their hand in and give, and Swami is supervising the distribution. So whatever you get, you can keep.
Right.
Now, while this was an exciting event, it was also a heartbreaking one for many, because they would look that the neighbor has got a wonderful perfume and you ended up with a toothbrush. You know?
Exactly.
Oh God, what is this? I have a toothbrush, he's got a perfume, and he's got a razor. At least he got a good soap. What, I got a shampoo sachet. And, you know, it's not even Stevens. You know, everybody gets different things. So invariably, when this distribution was going on, this brother recollected that there would be comparisons going on. What did he get? Hey, what did you get? Oh, you got, I got this. Oh, and you feel so blessed. And it so happens that the foolish mind thinks that if you have got a perfume, you are more blessed than a guy who got a toothbrush, because we give more value to a perfume than a toothbrush. We think that God also values the same way. But anyway, when all this discussion was going on, suddenly he said that a hush descended and everybody was snapping their fingers. Why? Because Swami had ascended the stage.
Okay.
And they had forgotten that, you know, Swami was there, and everybody was so lost in their own discussion. And in a moment, everybody became alert and started looking up to Swami. And Swami said, boys, have all of you got what you wanted? No, not have all of you got what you wanted. Have all of you received something or the other?
Mm-hmm.
They all said, yes, Swami. Swami said, now tell me, which among you wants Swami? He said this, turned and walked away. You know, this brother was saying that it was such a profound lesson. You know, all we are giving value to all these toiletries and all these things because they are coming from Swami. That's why they are so valuable. But so lost are we in them that ultimately we forgot Swami himself. You know, when Swami said that statement, was such a rude awakening to all of us. But why are you giving importance to those objects when the person who is actually given those objects is standing there? Why give attention to the creation when the creator is there?
You know, even as you say this, I'm tempted to take another direction. You know, sometimes you want something from Swami and you forget Swami. But sometimes you don't want to want something and you forget Swami. I'm reminded of that because of an interaction I had with a classmate of mine. You know, he was saying before he became a student, he used to come with a set of his friends to Swami, and Swami used to be kind to call them for an interview. And after the days, you know, darshan and all that, they would have a small satsang in the shed where they were staying. So many of these boys used to be his juniors in college, who were all first timers. And so he used to tell them what Swami would expect out of students and what Swami expects out of your youth and all that. So that time one of the boys raised a question. He said, brother, why does Swami give rings and chains? You know, why does he materialize objects for people? And this boy had not got anything from Swami. Okay, so he had not got a ring or a chain from Swami. And so he said, see, when your faith...
Yes, the tendency would be to say that there's nothing great about a ring or a chain.
Right. In fact, there is great about not receiving it. You know, that's the line of argument that he took.
Oh, okay.
Because he said that, you know, when your faith is not very strong, Swami has to strengthen it by giving you some things like that. So Swami gives you a ring or a chain and materializes so that, you know, you feel that, yes, this is God. For those who don't need such,
reinforcements,
then Swami doesn't give. So immediately you can understand the boys would have looked at his hands and found that there was no ring or a chain around his neck. So here is a
loved devotee of the Lord.
And somebody who doesn't need such reinforcements from God.
A true devotee.
Okay. And the next day what happens? Swami calls this group for an interview. And Swami is talking to all these boys. And before this boy could, you know, realize what happened, Swami waved his hand and materialized a ring for this boy.
Oh, okay.
And here was this boy in such a tough situation, he was looking at Swami and saying, no, Swami, I don't want the ring.
Because it let me down in the eyes of everybody here.
Right. And Swami is saying that, you know, shut up and take this now. I'm giving you something and you won't take it. You know, that's the other aspect, because sometimes we don't want to want something because you have created an image for yourself and you don't even want Swami to actually corrode that image which you've created for yourself. And in fact, that is exactly what Swami will do. Right? And that also reminds me of the cucumber incident that you told me.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. You know, this happened to Dr. Hanumanthappa, who was also the Vice Chancellor of the Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning.
Mm-hmm.
And there is this habit that when you visit a place of pilgrimage like Kashi, especially Kashi,
right.
you give up something for the Lord. You know, it is like Swami says, na karmana na prajaya dhanena tyage naike amritatva manushu. Man attains immortality not through wealth or progeny, but only through sacrifice. Sacrifice gives immortality. And in keeping with this ancient Vedic dictum, people go and give up different things for the sake of the Lord. And so here was, this was narrated again by, you know, Sailesh sir. He said that when he went to Kashi, he decided that he would give up eating cucumber.
Mm-hmm.
He said, for God's sake, I'm giving up cucumber. And that's what he gave up. When he had arrived, you know, because he was the Vice Chancellor, he was blessed to once share a common dining table with. Not once, many occasions. He was sharing a common dining table with Swami. And that day, he saw that two dishes were made, not two, one dish there on the table was made from cucumber. So he called the person and said, you know, that dish you don't serve me. Everything else you can serve me. And as the serving was going on, Swami suddenly notices his plate and asks, why is it you're not taking that dish?
Mm-hmm.
You don't like it? He says, no, Swami, I'm fine, actually, I don't want. No. He calls the person who's serving and telling him, what is this? How can you forget and make
Vice
this
Chancellor
lapse?
And you're not
Yeah, serving. You're not taking care. You serve him that dish. He says, no, Swami, it's fine now, I'm already done. No, why, you don't like it? He says, no, Swami, not that. Then have it, it's very tasty. I had it, see, I have taken, have. In fact, you should have more. And ultimately, you know, Swami convinces Hanumanthappa and he makes the person serve him 2-3 helpings of that cucumber dish. And Hanumanthappa doesn't know. He says, eat, Hanumanthappa. He's just waiting, you know, Swami is waiting for him to eat it. It's nice. Eat it. Taste it and see. So, the minute the Vice Chancellor puts it into his mouth, it seems Swami almost jumped up from his chair, clapping his hands and saying, he got you. Made you eat it. And then Swami told him, you're going all the way there. You've got so many other things that you can give up. You want to give up eating cucumber which you don't like anyway? You know, Swami tells us the story about a person who went and gave up eating bitter gourd. What's so great in giving up bitter gourd? You never like it anyway. You know, if I say, for Swami's sake, I don't smoke, there's nothing great. I don't like to smoke. I have never smoked in my life. And so therefore, there's nothing great. If I say that, you know, that person gave up smoking and Swami is so happy with him, and I have not smoked and Swami is not happy with me. It's not about the result. It's not about giving up something. It's about the effort that goes in. It's Lord always sees the efforts. And once again, that highlights the need, you know, for us to have a New Year resolution. Let it be a challenging one. Because that is where we can put in our efforts. And efforts are what are appreciated by Swami. If, you know.
Right, you know, very beautifully put. Efforts is what, because when Swami says, Tyage naiki amritatva manushu, it's that feeling behind that sacrifice. You know, you might give up something which, as though Swami wants that. You know, when we spoke about sealing on desires, we said sealing on desires is not because you can save some money and give it to Swami and Swami needs that money. It's because that sealing is good for you. You know, that's the same thing. Sacrifice is a feeling which is good for you. I'm always, you know, tempted to think of it this way. You know, when we were little children, when we ask something from our mother, you know, we say that I want this for my birthday.
Mm.
And if you're given that, the mother will tell that, you know, take this, say thank you. You know, the mother will say, I'm giving you something, say thank you. It's not that the mother needs the thank you, but she's asking you to tell thank you because to show gratitude is a good habit. To show gratitude is a good value to have. And that's correct. The same thing with Swami. Swami wants us to sacrifice and Swami wants us to express our gratitude because doing that is good for us. And, you know, that is something which we miss out many times when we are, you know, looking at giving up something and sacrificing something.
Perfect, Prem. And, you know, looking at the way the year is structured, you have Christmas followed by New Year. Christmas is a time when you're supposed to receive gifts. You make wish lists and you hope for Santa to come and, you know, fulfill all your wish lists. But I think that is also symbolic because that is a time when you make your wish list and you must go through this kind of inner soul searching to realize that no wish list is worth having other than the top wish or the top desire, because this life is enough only to achieve one such desire. And therefore then comes New Year when you make a resolution to achieve that which requires tremendous effort. You know, I think it requires tremendous effort not only to achieve that wish and desire, but also to keep away the other desires which will act as distractions. I am reminded of an interaction we had with Swami on the occasion of Ramzan.
Mm-hmm.
This was, I think, in 2006.
Okay.
All of us had planned a Ramzan program, and actually the way the day panned out, it was very interesting because we were all in our costumes and Swami called us into the bhajan hall for a pre-program discussion. You know, Swami would check the costumes and talk or make some comments.
Okay.
That used to be the norm. But that day, this session went on for an hour, after which Swami said, program over. Which means that was Swami's program for the day. We never put up any program. We were in the bhajan hall. After that we had bhajans and that was over. But that one day, how many insights and, you know, nuggets of wisdom Swami showered.
Mm-hmm.
One was about these desires. I asked Swami, you tell us that we must, you know, give up desires. But Swami, it is so tough. These desires come and hit us with such force that they sweep us off our feet. What do we do? Swami said, see, you must always have, cognizance of the truth that you are separate from the desire. Desire is something that is outside. It's external. It is not you. So you just keep the desire away. It is not you. It is not your nature to desire. So it is something artificial. The way Swami is saying is it is difficult for you to desire actually. Inculcate desire because it's not your nature to desire. So when Swami was saying this, it appeared a little confusing for me. So I asked, So Swami, when you say keep desires out, are you meaning suppression? Means, I didn't know a Telugu word for suppression. The conversation was in Telugu. So this one word, I used it in English. I said, Swami, do you mean suppression?
Okay.
Swami said, suppression kadu bangaru, separation. No, Swami played on the word, so immediately he said, it's not suppression, it is separation.
Separation.
You are not the desire at all. So why does it harass you? Swami said, see, even if you think it's a strong desire, just stand firm. Let it come and hit you. I assure you nothing will happen. Just stand firm. Swami said, then again it will come and hit you for a second time. Stand firm. It will hit you for a third time. Stand firm. After that, I'm telling you, it will not even tend towards you. It will leave you completely. That is what Swami assured. But then he said, but the problem is, the first sight of it, you simply gladly, willingly succumb to it. That is the problem. You never have the thing to stand firm. So, again, you know, New Year time is another beautiful time where we make a resolution to not only achieve our desire, but also to stand firm against these onslaughts of other distracting desires.
And another point which I would like to add here is, you know, we spoke about prioritizing and we're saying that this is more important, so we give up this. So that actually gives a perspective that first of all, get out of the mindset that you are sacrificing something. Because when you are actually going for something which is more special, how can you call it a sacrifice?
It's actually selfishness.
It's actually selfishness and you could say sublime self-interest and selfishness. You know, I am reminded of what a senior of ours told us once, you know. This boy had finished his studies here and he was waiting for Swami to give him a job. He waited for almost 2 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But Swami had other plans for him, and during one interaction Swami called him and very pointedly Swami told him that he wants him to go. Swami said, I want you to go and, you know, spread my message. I don't want you to stay here and work in any of these institutions. So he pleaded with Swami, Swami, I want to be with you, I want to be close to you, I want to be in Bharti. Swami said, no, my plan for you is different, you have to go. So this boy came and, you know, the rest of the boys were permitted to stay. This boy
came, waiting boys.
Yeah, the waiting boys, you know. This boy comes up to them and says, don't ever think that you guys are sacrificing. He said, I am sacrificing. I am the one who is sacrificing because I am leaving this, which is, I am throwing away a diamond and I am going for garbage. Knowing well that how important this is, I am giving it and I am going for something else.
You all are spending your time and days here waiting for Swami.
Exactly.
So don't think that you are sacrificing.
If in your wish list you are putting pleasing Swami or to attain Swami as the highest, nothing else which goes out of the list is
a sacrifice.
Can go into your sacrifice list because it makes no sense. It's just that you know that this is much, much, much more valuable than all the other things and you're going out for something which is, you know, in proportion so much more valuable.
You know, you said what that student said. Another spiritual aspirant more than 150 years ago made a similar statement, you know. And this is one of my most favorite incidents that I use while talking about sacrifice. This is the story of Bhaduri Mahashay. Mm-hmm. It is recorded in the autobiography of Yogi by Paramahamsa Yogananda. He says that, you know, Bhaduri Mahashay was a saint whom he met. And when he explored his history, he got to know that he came from a very rich, powerful and influential family. But the minute he was the sole heir, so he everything came to him. But the minute his prior generation passed away, he distributed everything in a matter of few hours in a day.
Wow.
He just distributed everything and decided to dedicate his life in the quest of spirituality. Then found his master and became a master himself. And then he had his disciples. And the disciples always admired this trait in their master, that he had this ability to sacrifice in a trice without even thinking. So they in fact used to commend him. They said, "Master, you're really so great. You're such a renunciant. In a matter of moments, you gave up everything. You gave up all the precious things you had in life in a matter of moments." And what struck Paramahamsa Yogananda was Bhaduri Mahashay's response to this.
Okay.
He said that, "You know, you are all reversing the case. I gave up a few paltry rupees and a few trinkets in exchange of a cosmic empire of infinite bliss. You, while you people, all the world, is giving up that very cosmic empire of infinite bliss for the sake of few paltry rupees, a career, a few trinkets. The whole world, all of you are the real great renunciants. I bow to you. I am not a renunciant." So, you know, really he had his head level on his shoulders. He knew that when you go to choose God, it is enlightened self-interest. It is enlightened selfishness. It is definitely not a sacrifice.
It's a wonderful thing, and you know, maybe this could bring us to the end of this discussion. But before that, you know, we spoke about making a list and, you know, how the lesser wishes will fall out on their own. Just a different scenario. If you're making a list of 100 wishes and Swami comes in front of you and says, "Pick 3 from there and I will answer them right away. I'll fulfill them right away."
Mm.
You know, if it happens to me, my first response would be, "Swami, you pick 3. Right? Because somewhere we know that, you know, his reasoning is far higher than ours. Because we always say that, "Swami, you pick 3. I think that is what we'll have to do. But that again brings us back to the first point where we started by saying that surrender. The idea that, "Swami, you know which is best for me." Why make 100 lists and pursue 100 of them and then at the end of it come and say that, "Swami, you pick 3.
Hmm.
Why not we say that, "Swami, I have no wishes. Choose what is best for me and do what is right for me."
It's very, it's something that we practice every day actually, Prem, you know, unconsciously of course. Because when it came to choosing our subject to major in, we sought Swami. When it came to choosing whether we should go ahead with an operation or not, we asked Swami. Because we trusted Swami more than the doctors. The challenge now is, maybe that could be a new resolution, that what we did then was unconsciously. Can we consciously do it for every of our choices? And know that every choice that we are getting is what Swami has picked for us. Possibly that could be a challenge, because, you know, as we discussed, this happens so subtly that we forget. It happens in such a subtle manner that we forget that we are committing a great blunder. I am reminded, maybe this could be a, yes, this is a wonderful concluding thought, but since we have a few minutes, another incident where such a forgetfulness happened is, you know, I remember during 1976, when the summer course was held in Ooty, Swami called all the boys in for a private session. And in that private session, Swami created a medallion of which had a map of India, and it had 18 points. And Swami said, "These are the 18 centers that I'll be setting up." Swami spoke many different things, and everybody was curious about this medallion that's apparently held their entire future. It held the glory of the Sai avatar that would be unfolding. And so when Swami passed it around, you can imagine the excitement. It's almost like, imagine on Shivaratri day when you have observed the Lingodbhavam, Swami passes around the lingam and says, "Have a look." You can imagine the excitement, right? Everybody will want to grab a piece of it, touch it to their head, have a look at it.
It's not just another materialization too. This is so special.
So like that Lingodbhavam, this is also very special. And the same way the medallion, everybody was so keen on looking at it. In fact, Ravi Kumar sir, who is currently the warden of Vrindavan campus of the institute, he says that somebody even borrowed somebody's glasses which were thick, and tried to read what is on it. Everybody is curious, and all this is going on. You know, Swami says, it is recorded in the discourse too, Swami says, why are you paying so much attention to the medallion when the one who has created that medallion belongs to you? You know, brings back the focus onto what is it that you want. We all want Swami. We give importance to that medallion because it has been given by Swami. But so lost are we in giving importance to that medallion that we forget Swami himself. You know, we give importance to so many things that we have got in our lives because they have been given to us by Swami. Whether it's our experiences, whether it's, you know, our, it may be material or non-material possessions. But as you rightly said, let it not go to a state where we give them so much importance that we forget the reason for the importance, that we get so involved in the path that we forget the goal. And I think that is a very, very nice takeaway or take-home lesson for us as we make our New Year resolutions.
I'd like to add just one more point to that. Maybe that could, that'll be my last point. If you want to add anything after that, you're welcome to. Something which an elder once told me, which was very profound, and I actually hold it very dear to my heart. You know, he said, whenever you make a prayer, you know, we always think of a prayer as a wish which Swami has to fulfill. He said, remember, whenever you make a prayer, every prayer is a commitment to God. And that actually changes the perspective of prayer itself, because it puts so much of responsibility on you. Because when I said you make a list of 100 things and Swami says pick 3 and you say Swami you pick, which means when I make the prayer Swami you pick the 3 things for me, I am making a commitment that Swami I will be happy with what you pick. I will accept what you pick for me. So every prayer actually comes with a commitment, and when we start this new resolution, as you said, by saying that Swami you pick what is right for me, we're actually making a promise to him that, Swami, whatever you pick, I'm going to be happy with it.
Nothing else to add, Prem. That's definitely the last thought. I think we should mull over it and keep it in our mind, not only on this day after the new year, but throughout the year too. Because as Swami says, every day is a new year. And if every day we can live with this thought, I think it'll be a beautiful way to spend the whole year.
So maybe with this thought, we will express our most beautiful, heartfelt gratitude to Swami, and you know, to give us this opportunity to sit and think of him. And it's such a beautiful moment for us this new year and this alumni meet, because we get to meet so many of them, and you know, it just baffles you how many lives Swami has touched,
and in ways that are so different.
Absolutely, so different. And
the impact is similar, but the way of achieving the impact is so different in each case.
And I think that is something which we have to thank Swami for, and letting us know. No, once a elder was saying that Swami will protect so many people around the world, but if he lets you know that he has protected you, consider yourself to be, you know, a blessed one. And that's why we should be happy that Swami has allowed us to know all these things, and through this enhance our love for Swami.
Yes, with that, it's the time in our studios is almost 2 o'clock. It's time for the next segment, Love to Love by Brother Chandu. Before that, dear listeners, any feedback, anything that you wish to say, contribute to this dialogue. Remember, this is a worldwide satsang. It's just that Prem and me have got the mics, and therefore it looks like a conversation between us. Do join in. Write to us at listener@radiosai.org. We would be very happy to receive your feedback, your queries, and your thoughts. With that, we will leave you with this song, after which you will be joined in by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.
இன்றே சுப தினமே.